Investing Simplified.
Fox News.
Price, president and wealth manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to another edition of Investing Simplified, brought to you live on Freedom 970. Also, we're live on podcasts on iTunes and Apple, and so you can catch our show. And you can also do that on at Freedom's station at freedom970.com. In studio with me is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
Morning, Carl. And Kevin Stege with the Baker Coastal CBA Firm.
Good morning, gentlemen.
And we also are going to have online here in a moment a gentleman by the name of Lewis Naviler. And many of you may know who he is. Anybody who invests in the stock or invests stock on your own, if you don't know Louis, you don't know stock. Because Louis is, without a question, one of the absolute best stock pickers around. He's his fund, he can boast 15 consecutive years of double-digit returns. And I don't think there's anybody can even come close to that. Louis, are you on the line? Well, we'll be getting Louis here on the line here real quick. But I do want to remind you that we are going to take some calls. If you want to call and you want to ask Louis a question, you can call us at 503-417-7626 or toll free 800-990-0750. This is an opportunity to ask probably one of the number one authorities on stock picks in the country a question, and you could do it free on our show. Louis is going to join us every quarter, the second Saturday, every quarter, in 2015. If you, the listeners, want to have him on more often, you simply email me, chuck@pfgwm.com, and we can have Louis on more often. But we will be having him on for giving us a stock earnings report and telling us about the markets. So I haven't seen anything yet that we have them. So in the meantime, I am going to give you kind of a, with the stock market starting now at the start of the year, the market is down a little bit. So do we got an indication that we have him up there yet? Okay. I do, again, want to say, if you want to call 503-417-7626, toll-free 800-990-0750. Well, we have a little bit of difficulty in the phone lines here. As soon as we get Louis on, we'll have him come on the show. In the meantime, I kind of give a little stock report here. And then we certainly are going to be really talking about the market when Louis comes on. The Dow Jones closed at 17,737. So far for the start of the year, we are down just a little bit. But it was down about 1% at the close of Friday. Now, how's the market stand versus the collapse and recovery 7 years and 3 months ago? Well, it's up 3.48% per year. And when you hear the numbers Louis's done versus these numbers, you're going to see why he is such a great stock picker. The Dow Jones closed on 12/31/99 at 11,497.12, and that was up 3.88%. Okay, we got him on the line. Louis, are you there?
I'm there.
Well, you missed my my introduction. Sorry about that. We had a snafu on our end here getting a hold of you. But I was just mentioning to our listeners that you're going to be joining us each quarter, first or the second Saturday each quarter, and talk to us about the stock earnings. And I also was telling them about the fact that you've managed the Blue Chip Fund, and you have a pretty phenomenal track record of 15 years in a row of double-digit returns. And that's pretty amazing in this kind of a marketplace.
Well, we're very fortunate.
Yeah. What is your secret?
Well, you know, and we're doing good now. You know, on both the funds, I run in top 1% year to date. What's happening is the market may be down, but we're up because we're going into earnings season. And every earnings season, we go in locked and loaded with fundamentally superior stocks. And, you know, for example, in my large cap blue chip stocks, I'm going to have about 24% sales growth this quarter. The S&P, believe it or not, is going to have flat sales, and that's not because business is bad. It's because the strong dollar is pinching the profits of these big multinational companies, because more than half the sales of the S&P come outside the United States. And then I'm going to have at least 32% earnings growth, and the S&P will probably only have about 8% or so. So, and then I don't pay a premium price earnings ratio. So I'm what they call a quant. I'm a fundamental quant. And we use these huge databases to stack the odds in our favor. And we actually don't pay a premium for growth. All our portfolios are at 15 times this year's estimated earnings, and we tend to have big surprises. So we're probably really at 12 to 13 times actual earnings.
So you basically pick stocks based on the logic of earnings.
Yes, and the faith that earnings will drive the market. Now, sometimes earnings don't drive the market. The markets get distracted. But I've been at this 34 years, and I can tell you 70% of the time earnings are driving the market. And it's very reassuring. It gives me staying power. You know, stocks can gyrate quite a bit, but, you know, the earnings, in my opinion, help to stabilize the stocks. The other thing that's stabilizing the stocks are the dividend yields are pretty high for the S&P now. You know, they're over 2%. That's more than the bank. And the buybacks are really out of control right now. You know, I have over 37 large-cap stocks are buying back $1 billion or more stock a year.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. You know, one of the things that has always impressed me about your models, you've done extremely well. And, of course, I know about your models through Jerry Murphy with Foliometrics, who also was one of the co-editors of my book, and I know you and Jerry have been friends for a long, long time, and we use some of Jerry's models, which incidentally have your models in them, for the management of our firm. But you also have various newsletters that people can buy, and you also have programs that individual investors who want to be who want to invest the money themselves and stuff can contact you directly and get into your service.
Yeah, and basically we just want to help people. So a lot of people learn about us through our Blue Chip Growth Letter. That's at www.navalier.com, navaliergrowth.com, navaliergrowth.com. And they can try it themselves. What we have on all our databases, navalier.com, our management company, and navaliergrowth.com, we have free stock grading online. So people can go there and key in their stocks, and they can actually save their portfolios. And then we grade the stocks on an A, B, C, D, and F basis. An A is, of course, a strong buy. A B is a buy. A C is a hold. A D is a dog. And F is a dog with fleas.
I like it. Yeah. Well, you've had a phenomenal track record. I mean, some of the stocks that you've been involved in lately, Apple, you were up in your model portfolio about 250%. Canadian Natural Resources up about 206, Imperial Oil up about 166, Hess Corp 53%, Occidental Petroleum 231. So you've been a real leader in the market on growth stocks and on income producing stocks. How do you look at the price of oil declining at this time? How do you look at it? Because the guys on TV every day they have a reason for the volatility in the market. And it gets a little old because one day the market's going up because the oil price is dropping. The next day they say, oh, man, oil's dropping again. The stock market's dropping again. It's like
Brian's a CNBC anchor, and he was in North Dakota a while ago. And I think he did a disservice because he was wearing the goofy hat in North Dakota talking about the oil price decline. And Brian said that he talked to somebody, and they're going to beat up the sand companies to make the sand for fracking. They're going to beat up the railroads to transport the oil. They're going to beat up the pipeline companies to transport the oil. And they're just going to beat up all their suppliers because their prices have fallen. And that's not true. You see, natural gas prices have plunged, and that didn't happen. And even though oil prices have plunged, The companies that transport everything, the sand companies that make all the sand for fracking, that's all going to be fine. And there was a Portland company near you, GBX, Greenbrier, that just announced a record earnings because they have a record order backlog to make all the trains. They transport the oil. And so what's interesting is the fall in oil, it was caused by excess inventory, seasonal weakness, and a strong dollar. Now, your seasonal demand will pick up in late February, March, so we do expect oil to firm up. We do expect the supply glut to continue. Some of it's from the U.S., all the fracking and discovery we've done. A lot of it's from Iraq, who's producing more oil now. They did deal with the Kurds. And Libya was producing more oil, but they had a terminal go down, so we'll see. You know, it's when you're having a kind of a when you have militants and things like that, it doesn't help your production. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but I do think oil is going to enter a new range, and whether it's going to be between, 45 and 75, we'll find out soon. But it's going to firm up here, and a lot of the energy stocks that got hit have nothing to do with the price of energy. You know, Wall Street creates these ETFs that just say, oh, energy, okay, well, maybe it's a pipeline, maybe it's a terminal, maybe they make the rail cars, maybe it's a railroad that transports it. But that doesn't mean that they're going to be affected by the price of energy.
Well, if you were to say right now, of all the stocks that you follow and look at, if there were a couple of stocks that you would say that are absolutely way undervalued, are going to have terrific earnings into the future, but what would that be?
Well, I really like a lot of the techs now. NXPI is especially semiconductor. I'm buying Tower Semiconductor. It's an Israeli stock, TSEM. I think it's TSEN, excuse me. Skywork Solution, SWKS. ABGO is another good one. Tech's not going anywhere. I think some of the tech stocks were hit because of the strong dollar. I pinched their profits, but they're much more currency resilient than some of the big multinationals. The ones that are going to be hurt here are the Cokes, the McDonald's, the IBMs. Caterpillar has over 70% of sales outside the United States. So the strong dollar is really starting to pinch their profits.
Well, Louis, one of the things I've always admired about you is that you're one of the guys in the industry. There's a lot of fluff out there and a lot of BS out there in the marketplace, but you're one of the guys who actually has done this on the firing line. You've actually created a lot of personal wealth through being a stock picker, and you've actually not only talked about it, but you actually have done it.
And yeah, I'm really a my own investor. What I do, and I do this with Jerry, is we actually seed mutual funds. We actually go to people like Jerry and say, "Hi, Jerry, can we start a new fund? I'll put a bunch of money in." And then why I do that is when I seed a fund and then I grow it, the way fund accounting works, you only have to pay taxes once a year. Well, if you have a managed account or ETFs, you have to pay taxes each quarter based on your realized gain losses and all that stuff. But with a fund, you only have to pay taxes once a year, so I get a little bit more compounding going. But there's a quirk of mutual fund accounting, and it is the distribution each year is based on all everybody in the pot. So if I seed a fund and I grow it tenfold that year, I'm only going to pay 10% of the taxes I should. And then the second year, if I grow it fivefold, I'm only going to pay 20% of the taxes I should. So I one of the first funds I did, I seeded it, and I didn't pay taxes for 14 years. Okay, I mean, I got so big, finally got over $1 billion, I couldn't grow this fast. And that's what we did with Jerry the other day. And so I'm originally from Berkeley, California. So I go to, places like Southern Cal and stuff and say I'm a bad person. You're not going to pay your fair share of taxes while my funds are growing. So it's just a quirk of accounting. And I have my own money where my mouth is, and this is a labor of love.
Well, there's nothing wrong with capitalism. It's alive and well. And I think if you have the ability to do that, I think more power to you. And I know you've done a great job, and we are offering some of Jerry's money managed portfolios and some of your funds. We're going to be doing that program in 2015 for some of our clients who want to be a little more aggressive, don't want to do it on their own. They want us to help them with it. I do have some clients that are very good investors on their own, and then I refer them to get your services and to go in there and look at yours and to use you as a resource for their picking of their investments, because you've got a track record second to none.
Well, we appreciate, you know, the thing I really respect about Jerry, and it does characterize my firm, is we're known as very good risk-adjusted managers, too. My largest fund has a Lipper rating of 5, a preservation of capital. It only deviates 2.85% a month, according to Lipper. That's very low risk. And the other thing everybody should realize is the markets aren't as risky as they used to be because the dividend yields are so high. You know, dividends did spike in 2012 before they raised the tax rates. Remember, Costco borrowed and the bond market paid an extra big juicy dividend. But today, dividends are higher than ever. Dividends are tax advantaged. And then when you have low interest rates and low price earnings ratios, it just fuels corporate stock buybacks. And so the market has been going up without a lot of money going in it. And now increasingly fixed income investors are have to turn to the stock market just to get the yield. And, you know, I have a billion-dollar year bond business too. And but I can get a higher yield in the stock market than I can in bonds now.
Well, right now, that's very true. I mean, there are some dividend-paying stocks that are paying outrageously, you know, a high dividend.
I have a new dividend grader on Navalier.com that we're very proud of, and the stocks that actually score the highest are the ones that double their dividends every 6 to 7 years, something like a Lockheed Martin. AutoZone scores very high, too. You know, both the stocks also are aggressively buying their stock back. But, you know, you can push it and get a yield over 10% if you want to do REITs and LPs. We do that, too, but the issue is those as the yield gets higher, they do get much more volatile. And, of course, when you get a yield that high, you don't want to have it all in energy. A lot of it has been in energy, and some of those dividends may not be that safe, so depending where they're located. So the real key is to basically get the returns the clients want, but to control the risk. And I think everybody should realize that utilities were up 30% last year because when the market was volatile, money didn't leave the market. It just sloshed over the utility side. And so money's not leaving the market. It does slosh around. And now it's definitely trying to find a critical path, silver lining, which happens to be the stocks that not only have the good sales and earnings, but also decent yield.
Hello, Louis. This is Kevin Stege, CPA. Some of the stuff I've been reading lately seems to indicate that 2015 might continue to be a pretty good year for the markets and the economy as a whole. Do you still see that perspective, or maybe more of the perspective that hey, we're time for a reset here at some level or another?
Well, the markets have to correct once a year. We had a correction in October. We had pretty good volatility post Thanksgiving. We'll have these little whoop-de-doos, but every time the market dips, it tends to rally back because we call it the tail wagging the dog. The dividend stocks usually lead the way first. But, you know, Wall Street creates these baskets so people can sell via ETFs or broadly-based indices, so they do throw the baby out with the bathwater, but then they right themselves usually pretty fast. But we just finished the strongest economic growth in 12 years. It grew 5% in the second, third quarter. The fourth quarter GDP looks like it's only going to be about 3%. A lot of that is there was excess inventories from the previous quarter. A lot of the growth is coming from robust consumer spending. You know, everybody's got more money in their pockets because of lower gasoline and energy prices. And then finally, you've got as the trade deficit shrinks with falling energy and stronger dollar, what's happening is that's adding to growth too. Also, energy is very interesting because traditionally when not only energy prices fall, but commodity prices fall in general, it ignites a rally in emerging markets. And it's a little early for that now, but what should happen is the people in the poorer countries, they'll have more money in their pocket if food and energy costs continue to decline. And that usually triggers a nice little economic rally. So the foundation is very good. Third and fourth year presidential election terms are very good, too, because all the new candidates come out and suck up to everybody and tell everybody what they want to hear. It doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on. They just make people feel better and give them hope. But it's just time to be happy. And you know, there's tragedies in the world, like what happened in Paris and stuff. But the bottom line is life goes on, and especially here in America, we got a lot to be thankful for.
Well, Louis, this is Carl Jepson, one of the other folks here, and I was just curious. You know, we hear a lot of talk about the ultimate effect of the big debt that has been accrued as a result of the, mm-hmm. you know, all of the 2008 type crash and all that stuff, and you know, bailing out the banks and all that stuff. How do you feel the effect of the big, you know, big national debt is going to be?
Well, there's some really profound things that are going on. First, the Fed's balance sheet went, and I used to work for the Fed. The Fed's balance sheet used to be $800 billion. Now it's over $4.5 trillion, and they've stopped the money pump, but it'll slowly grow over time with interest. That $4.5 trillion balance sheet they now have, over $2 trillion went to short mortgage-backed securities. So they definitely went in and tried to save the housing sector, and the rest of the money continues to manipulate rates. But the biggest thing that's going on is because they have negative rates in Europe, Switzerland and Japan, foreign capital continues to pour in the United States to flatten our rates. And we see that that's very obvious right now. Germany's bonds crack 1% in August. They crack 0.5% in the beginning of the year. So Spain yields are far lower than ours. So are Italy's. So they're not going to be able to raise rates no matter what the Fed says. In fact, Charles Evans, an influential member of the Chicago Fed, just said that this week. He was on CNBC recently as well. So when any country gets a lot of debt, us, Europe, Japan, they can't raise rates. And that's not really me. It's a guy named Peter Orszag, who was President Obama's budget director in the first term. And he's pointed out if rates ever got above 2%, the government would blow up. But we Americans are more optimistic than other people around the world. We still think we can grow our way out of our problems. Our immigration does work better in America than elsewhere. Obviously, it's not a perfect anywhere. But if you really want to see how to fix the country, you just look north to Canada. You know, Canada was pretty messed up 30 years ago, and how they solved their problem is they just doubled their population by letting in foreigners with money. And so I'm not trying to pick on other immigrants in America, but if we would just let in like 100 million people with 2 million each, you'd be shocked how that would help the country. And the Chinese have already figured that out. You may know Chinese are buying homes from Southern Cal all the way up to Seattle. Want the kids to go to our schools and stuff. My kid goes to some fancy school, and he's pretty much in the Asian dorm. So it's interesting what's going on. And I think as long as, you know, of our 50 states, we still have 30 pro-business states, and we're a beacon of hope for the rest of the world, I think it's going to be fine. And hopefully we can grow our way out of our mess. But we do need more people paying into our social safety nets, Social Security, Medicare, et cetera. You've already seen them raise Medicare taxes. Obviously, Social Security taxes may be coming, just like they've done Medicare.
You know, one of the concerns I have, being in the business that I have, and we do 401ks as well, right now with the fact that a young person wanting to invest their money, they're having to put 6.2% into Social Security, and their employer is matching the 6.2%, which is obviously part of their payroll package. And many of them are having a higher percentage going to Social Security than they are into their 401k.
Yeah, we need more people paying in. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, what's also interesting is I happen to work in a – or live in two right-to-work states. And what happens at my firm, when someone makes a lot of money, we actually fire them. But we don't really fire them. We fire them to move them from W-2 to 1099. Because on a 1099, they'll avoid the 2% payroll tax that we have to give the state. They can go to a SEP instead of a 401k and put away more money. So actually, you know, I can only do this in the right-to-work states. So I have, like, California employees I can't do this for. I got employees in Washington I can't do this for. But, you know, for the Texases, the Floridas, the Nevadas, I can do this. And, you know, government tries to help people by putting stuff on your paycheck. And sometimes I think that they don't realize what they've done. Now, of course, all those 1099 people then go to self-employment taxes. But the real reason they're switching from W-2 to 1099 is so they can save more tax deferred.
Makes sense. It really does. And that's one of the things that I think a lot of companies don't have the advantage like you do to be able to do that for their employees.
Oh, sure. And I happen to be fortunate. I'm in a right-to-work state. If my firm was headquartered in a non-right-to-work state, so Washington, California, Massachusetts, I could never do that. It's prohibited.
Now your firm is headquartered in Nevada?
In Reno, Nevada.
In Reno, okay. And you live in Florida?
Yeah, but I have a home in Reno. I go back and forth. You know? And, you know, essentially, I'm in Palm Beach, Florida right now. But there's more money in Reno than there is in Palm Beach. And the reason is we have all the Washington corporations like Microsoft and Amazon. They're trying to avoid the 2% business opportunity tax on domestic revenues. And then we have some distribution, too. But then we have all the California Treasury. So Apple, Cisco, Oracle, Intel are all in Reno. Intuit founder is my neighbor in Reno. I know the Schwab office in Reno is the largest in the world, believe it or not. Okay, Shanghai is number two. And so what's happened is you know, money moves, and if you're not careful with it, it moves. It's a huge treasury area, and down there, and you know, it's interesting. You know, I don't see my neighbors because I think they live somewhere else. It seems to be a California thing.
Yeah.
Although we see a lot of Oregon plates now because Nevada put personal property taxes on car tags, so now everybody's getting Oregon plates for some reason and Montana plates.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is what makes America great.
Yeah, absolutely.
We figure out the jurisdiction, you know, just like those people in Vancouver, Washington, drive across the bridge to shop at Costco in Portland. Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute. I can resemble that. Yep, yeah. I understand what you're saying. Well, they're going to be changing that, however. The states are going to be changing that, and I know we've been notified from LifeLock that now we're going to be getting hit with our state sales tax on the LifeLock purchases because the state of Washington has went and passed an internet law, evidently, that if you purchase stuff and they can tie it to the state, they can charge you the sales tax of the state that you belong in. So I think modern technology is going to be catching up with all of us.
I know they've been trying to do that with Amazon too. You know, well, I still want you to know you can always move to Wyoming and shop in Montana. You know, Wyoming's tax free, and then Montana's sales tax free. But the weather's kind of extreme.
Yeah, but I can tell you they got really great steaks there.
They do, and you got to be careful driving because of all the animals on the road. You know.
And all the drunk hillbillies. I shouldn't say that. Montana and Wyoming are really great states. I shouldn't say that.
I just know there's antelope everywhere, and I almost hit a bison one night.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Louis, I really appreciate you joining us this morning, and we look forward to talking to you into the future. And again, if somebody, we're going to set up a link on our website and on our other sites so that people can actually, you know, go directly to and get your newsletter. And sign up for any other things that you may have available to the public. And so go ahead and give us, again, your website, and if people want to...
Sure. Well, Navalier.com is the management company, and there's a service there called Market Mail, which is free. So people can go to Navalier.com and sign up for Market Mail. If they want to see our Blue Chip Growth Letter and things like that, they should go to NavalierGrowth.com. We have to keep the newsletter business separate from the management business because of the SEC. But you know, we have free databases on both sites for everybody.
You know, you've been around a long time in the money management field, and just as a little side note, I saw an ad the other day, and I'm going to email you the question rather than asking you on the air. I'm going to email you a question that I have, and maybe you can get back to me on it, and then I'll share it with the listeners, but. Really appreciate your time today, and we look forward to talking to you in the future. And again, we will have a link on our website to your newsletter and also to your website.
Great. All right.
Thanks, Louis. And next time you're in town, let me know.
All right, I will. Take
Thank
care.
You. You Thanks. Bet. Bye-bye. We're going to be right back with Investing Simplified, and we're going to be back with the tax investigator because I know Kevin is just ready to talk right now when he heard Louis make that statement about converting your employees to 1099s. So we'll be right back with the tax investigator.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Price Financial Group Wealth Management. We do invest.
Investing Simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
You are listening to Investing Simplified, and that was a good segment there, Chuck. New guest and some good insight and some aggressive tax strategies. But I got to hand it to him. People are creative, and if it's within the law, then I guess you can do it, right, Carl?
Yeah, well, yeah. Know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's that famous court case that you're allowed to do everything that the law allows you to do. However, if you step off the line, they will squash you.
This is true. Yes, yeah. This is true. Well, it's just kind of along the lines. Actually, it's not that aggressive of a tax strategy, but what he mentioned. But you've heard in 2014, one of the big news events was companies taking their business out of the country to avoid United States income taxes for their corporation, and how unpatriotic that is.
Well, what it is it tells you how stupid our people are running the country, that we would establish laws that make it more favorable for you to take your business outside the United States. And I mean, I don't blame the companies for following the rules, but I do blame the guys that wrote the rules. Mm-hmm. And I believe that years ago there was a politician who ran for office and told everybody that sucking sound you hear are all your jobs leaving the country. And boy, was he ever right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the solutions that has been proffered for the Social Security problem that lingers in the couple decades down the road is right now employees are subject to the 6.2% on the first roughly 100,000. It's about 115 or so, or 118,000 of their wage as an employee, and then after that you don't pay any. And so to some people it's an unfair tax, because if you make $20,000, you're paying 6.2%. If you make $118,000, you're paying 6.2%. And if you make, $500,000, you're paying 6.2% of only your first $100,000. So the guy making more money isn't putting as much of his income in. And so they call it a regressive tax. And so one of the solutions has been to raise that the threshold up. Possibly like Medicare, you pay 1.45% on all of your wage, no matter how much. And so there's been talk to raise that, but that would just make his, Louis's tax planning idea of taking you out of an employee and making you a 1099 person maybe a little more favorable. But there's still some, it's not going to save you a ton of Social Security, but you can definitely put more money into your retirement, as he said. Well, today on the Tax Investigator, we are going to look practically at the Affordable Care Act and how it affects you in the next 3 months, 3.5 months as you file your tax return and what you should be looking for. You know, we all know that, yeah, we needed insurance. We all know that we probably have to do something on our tax return to indicate we were either covered or not covered. And do we owe a penalty? How do we calculate the penalty? That type of a thing. And what forms will I be getting? So we'll keep this fairly lighthearted. If you have a question, definitely give us a call at 503-417-7626, and we can specifically answer your question. Hopefully, this is still there's still a lot of snakes to shake out of the Affordable Care Act and how it's practically going to work, other than the fact that we're all doing a lot of consideration on our tax returns.
Well, Kevin, I know you're going to talk about the changes, you know, for right now for doing our taxes for 214, but isn't, as I understand it, aren't the majority of the things going to hit us starting in 215?
Well, maybe more of the economic impact is being phased in over the 2015 and 2016. The administrative part of it should be in place, and this will be our first year of making it work administratively, you know, with the insurance companies, with the IRS, with the exchanges, with the tax preparers and the taxpayers. That ball has started already. And so here's the cliff notes, if we will, to get you the executive summary. If you were covered by insurance at your work, you work for Intel, you work for Nike, what have you, even small employers, a lot of them offer health insurance. If you received health insurance through your work and it was a qualifying plan, which most of them made sure it was, then you will get a 1095B. And that is going to come from the insurance company, whoever your work uses. Maybe it's Blue Cross, Blue Shield, or Providence, what have you. And they're going to send you one 1095B indicating all of the people that you had covered under your insurance policy. So if it's just the employee, it'll just be their name on there. If it was the employee and their spouse, it'll have both. If it's employee, spouse, and kids, it'll have all those folks on there. And you're only going to get one form, and you may need to make copies for other people in your household, such as a kid who is your dependent but still has to file a tax return. You're going to want to make a copy of that and give it to them so that they have it with their tax file and can appropriately know how to file their tax return. So the 1095B, this is going to take care of 75% of taxpayers out there. Is you're covered by your employer. You'll get your 1095B by January 31st, and that's going to pretty well give you what you need. And it's as simple as if you're covered all year on that form, you have one box to check on page 2 of your 1040, line 61, where the penalty is calculated. All you do is check a box that says I was covered all year. That lets the IRS know that you're not paying a penalty, you're covered, move on with your tax return. Hopefully it's as simple as that. Hopefully the 1095Bs come through clean. Well, maybe you went and got your insurance through the privately. Maybe you're not working and you just went to an insurance company and got your own insurance policy. You'll get that same 1095B again from the insurance company indicating the months that you were covered. And so hopefully you can check your box and you're fine. If you went to the exchange and you were part of getting the premium assistance and they prepaid some of your insurance premiums, you will get from the exchange a form 1095A, and that's going to indicate how much they of your insurance premiums they paid for you, how much your insurance cost, so on and so forth. And now you're going to have another tax form to fill out on your tax return that's fairly involved by month, that you're going to be dropping a bunch of this information on, recalculating how much premium they paid you and whether you are entitled to get more premium assistance because your income was lower than you thought, or whether you're going to have to pay some of that premium assistance back. So that's the 1095A.
So the less money you make, the more complicated the return.
Yes. Thank you for that summary.
Does that make any sense?
Well, a lot of it doesn't, but that certainly doesn't. Yeah. Yeah.
Carl, please don't
go
butt,
away.
Don't
butt in. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Don't muddy the waters. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And so that form is going to come from the exchange. Now, Oregon didn't have an exchange set up, but there was the national exchange that you could have gone through, and that's where it's healthcare.gov, and that's where that form is going to come from. And so that's really going to cover the most situations right there is your 1095A from the exchange, 1095B from the insurance company, and that's going to – anything outside of that, you've got problems. Just call a tax preparer.
Kevin, from what I've heard about the government exchange, there's only been like 9 million people sign up for that and get on the government – plan where they were saying it was going to be 40, but it ended up being 9. So the majority of people are not going to have that problem. They're going to have their insurance here.
Yep.
And just be able to report it. Now, is your private insurance company going to provide that information to you?
Right. If you went and purchased an individual policy, then correct, you'll get the form from
you. And as a small company, if you'll get that from your insurance company to provide to your employees to show they were covered?
I see what you're saying. The insurance company, I don't know if they're going to mail it to the employer to hand out or if they're just going to, they'll probably mail it directly to the individual, but I don't know how that's going to work. But the insurance company will provide it. So that's what's going to happen there. Now, there.
You know what? We've got a quick caller here. David on line one's got a tax question right down your alley, Kevin. David, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Okay. And you got a tax question?
I do for Kevin. Okay. I have a small business, and according to the president, I didn't start it. So a tax ID number, how protective of that do I need to be? Like a social security number, you know, you get ID fraud and you want to cover that. But my tax ID, How protective do I need to be with that?
You know, that not as much as a social security number. In fact, we recommend people that have a sole proprietorship go out and get a EIN, as they call it, employer ID number, even regardless if you're an employer or not, to protect your social security number so you don't have to hand that out to people to get your 1099s. The tax ID number is definitely more another layer of protection. Often charities even have their tax ID number on their website so that people have that for tax reporting situations. So not as much. I wouldn't just hand it out willy-nilly, but I don't think that there's – I haven't heard of I haven't heard of any situation where that has been that can be misused. It's definitely another level of protection. So
okay, yeah. That's all I have. Thanks.
Good question, David. Thank you.
Yeah, very good question. Yeah. So with the finishing up here on the Affordable Care Act, there are a number of there's a bit of a penalty if you don't have the right coverage. It's not too bad to start with. In 2014, it progressively gets worse for 15 and 16 and thereafter. And I won't go into the details of the penalty, but it can be as high as 1% of your income if you made a lot of income and stuff. The less income that you make, the less the chance this crazy penalty calculation is.
Now, this is per individual you're talking about.
It is. Per individual per month is the calculation. So it's pretty involved. So if you have 3 or 4 kids and they weren't covered, but maybe you were for half the year, so on and so forth. I'll just briefly touch that there are some exemptions from this, and those are ones you'll want to look into if you did not have coverage. And some of the exemptions are granted from the exchange. Some are granted just directly on your tax return as an election. So just know that there's some exemptions out there, and that should be looked into.
Well, what about retired government people and retired military people? They have, I think it's CHAPS, or they have that government insurance type thing. So are they affected at all by that?
Well, those are qualifying plans. And so they are considered covered. They'll get their form 1095B, I'm sure, in some manner indicating they can check the box, they were covered, move on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and come right back with Carl's comments. But if you have a question for anybody, give us a call at 503-417-7626 or toll free 800-990-0750. You're listening to Investing Simplified on Freedom 970 or on podcast. So we enjoy having listeners on podcast, and you can email and listen to the show live. We'll be right back. Say goodnight to me.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com. 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. 417-7626. Here's Carl Jepsen.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepsen with Carl's comments today. And today I'm going to talk about some things that are a little bit more practical as far as planning is concerned. And I thought I'd break this up into two pieces because and bring it back on the second part of it next show, because this involves a little bit more in two different sort of subject areas. One is that the basic subject is this: is when good planning fails. In other words, when you've failed to plan, or when you've done good planning and it still fails. And the first part has to do with if you've done good planning, or the same thing applies if you haven't done any planning, I suppose. But and you have failed to plan or have planned well for incapacity, becoming unable to do stuff, then what happens? What is the effect of that? Well, in the sense of incapacity, if you're going to do some good planning, generally you'd have a power of attorney with a very trusted person as your agent. You'd have a trust with a trustee, with a very trusted trustee. And you'd probably have adequate insurance for various things. Now, all of those things are about pretty much what you can do for your planning. There are kind of, sort of two kinds of incapacity, but there are three situations that are actually two big situations that I see where even though you've done all of those things, that your planning might not work very well. The first one is where you have some kind of incapacity, but it's not enough capacity to prevent you from understanding kind of what's going on, and you're able to object and fight about it, about any kind of changes. There's a common misconception that if a person holds their parents' power of attorney, that if at any time they think that their parents are no longer able to do stuff, they can run in and drag them out to the home and put them in there against their will. And that's simply not true. Even if they, just because they may have lost some capacity or lost all capacity doesn't mean they don't have some rights. And so if they have the capacity to object and fight, now I'll grant you there are sometimes situations where perhaps someone's had a stroke or they've gotten, some terrible dementia disease that gets them to the point where they don't really know what's going on. Well, yeah, of course, a lot of families do that. They put them in a home because they can't take care of them anymore, and usually there's no objection. But there are a lot of gray areas where where either it's done prematurely or whatever, but you know, somebody says, I'm not taking that. I'm going home. I'm getting out of here. And they find a way. Even in locked facilities, I've known people who, you know, they've let them out in the backyard with a 6-foot big fence, and, you know, some 75-year-old guy or 80-year-old guys, you know, jumped the fence and, you know, hopped in a TriMet bus and ended up, you know, lost. But nonetheless, but, you know, that's a kind of important thing, because I think that as most people, I would think it would be terrible to lose your ability to make decisions. And so my thought would be that you know, you give them as much, even if it's risky. You know, we let our kids do stuff that's risky because they need to learn things. Well, I think at least a degree of respect is offered to our parents, that they have a right to fall down, to get hurt, to have a cigar, to, you know, drink a glass of whiskey if they want to. I mean, really, it's only fair. But so that's one situation. And the other one is where they have a power of attorney or a trustee who's become untrustworthy. And in other words, they're milking the funds or something. And that's the time when then, you know, another family member or an agency will have to intervene as soon as they find out about it, if they find out about it. So sort of a subcategory of that one is where they have actual the capacity to do what they need to do, but it's not quite enough to resist the kind of strong arm or isolated influence of the ne'er-do-well person, the third party.
You know, Carl, it comes to mind to me that you know, you and I have encountered some situations with some of our clients, but under Oregon, and I believe Washington as well, there are some elder care laws where elders are protected under the law for people who are devious with their money.
Oh, absolutely.
To not doing the thing that's in the best interest of the elder.
Absolutely. And there's the an Elder Abuse Protection Act, and it involves both physical types of abuse, emotional abuse, and financial abuse. Now, those are kind of the general categories. And
at what age does that start?
65. So quit picking on me. So,
but I mean, when you think about that, and I mean, here's the thing, and we've all encountered this in various different ways, but when you're 65 and you're no longer working or you're retired and you have to go out there and count on people, whether it's the guy that's fixing your roof, or the guy that's doing your yard work, or the guy that's investing your money, or the guy that's doing your legal work or your tax work, you have to count on them that they are professional and they are putting your best interests at heart. And that's, unfortunately, that's not always the case.
No, there are some exceptions in the law, but as a general rule, essentially wrongfully obtaining or taking money from an elder person, and an elder person is defined as anybody 65 or older, or a person who has a disability or things like that. There's some other categories, but that's that, you know, that constitutes financial elder abuse. It's a very broad category. So, but I don't think it's kind of common sense. You know, the person who goes in to get their they want their car fixed, and 90% of the mechanics in town would charge, you know, $100, and the guy that they go to says, oh, this guy doesn't know what's going on. It's going to be, that's going to be $1,000. You know, I mean, well, you know, that's kind of that's borderline elder abuse, I'd say. So anyway, that's kind of what we're talking about as far as the situations. But so what happens if that, you know, comes about where the planning didn't work? You know, somebody really needs protection. Well, there are two things. They're called a guardianship and a conservatorship. In Washington, they're just called guardianship. There's guardianship of the person and guardianship of the property in Washington. In Oregon, the guardian is the person who deals with the person, and the conservatorship is the person that deals with the property. And basically, there are two types of incapacity. The test for guardianship is that the person basically is unable to provide for their own health and safety. In other words, they do things that are dangerous, or you know, they can't ever remember to take their medications, or they won't do so, or they're, you know, constantly, you know, falling down, or they're in such a terrible physical condition that they're just at risk at all times, and that can be a little bit of a gray area too. The other one is for conservatorship is essentially the ability to manage their financial affairs in a reasonably prudent manner. Again, I like to think that there's some room for folly. You know, if they happen to like the jewelry channel or whatever it is that they're watching, and they're not spending their entire money, but they're buying stuff periodically just because they like stuff. That's one thing. Now, if they're buying $12,000 a month, that's probably different. Maybe. Well, I don't know. There are people who do that and that aren't necessarily incapacitated, but nonetheless, so those are kind of example kinds of things. So a guardian and a conservator have to be appointed by the court, and that's the process that they have to go through. And so this is kind of a last, and it's a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal. It's time consuming. It's expensive. So I just thought I'd quickly give a kind of an overview of how that works and that sort of thing. So first of all, somebody, and it's almost any interested person, can file a petition in the court that says this person needs a guardian or a conservator or both, and here's why. And it lists a bunch of reasons. And the court then appoints a person that's called a court visitor. And this is a person who has some training, sometimes in gerontology, sometimes in social work or psychology or things like that, so that they can analyze people and kind of how they're doing pretty well. And they go out and they interview the person that's the protected person, and they also interview caregivers and relatives and anybody else who can probably provide reasonable information as to their status. They then make a report, and the report basically says yes, they need a guardian, or no, they don't. This thing really requires a lot of it carries a great deal of weight.
Yeah, well, we're getting to the end of our show. So, Kevin, how does somebody get a hold of you?
We're at baker-colson.com, 503-666-5569. Go Ducks.
And Carl?
503-255-8795.
And you can get a hold of us at 503-253-3000 or pfgwm.com. And I'll second that, go Ducks, but also go Seahawks today at 5 and beat Carolina. We'll be back next week with Investing Simplified, and Rodney Johnson will be on the air with us at that time. So we'll talk to you then. Thank you very much.
We do Investing Simplified. Financial Group.